You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. A storm is brewing over the parliamentary offices of the Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator Stephen Conroy. One of the 2007 election promises of the Rudd government is seemingly becoming a little more problematic than first thought. Protecting our children online, at first glance, seems to be a noble and proper thing to do. But what's now becoming evident is the problems associated with implementing such a policy and spinning it in such a way that it has a positive connotation. That is, protecting our kids. How can that be bad? On the other side of the coin, you have that ugly word censorship, a word that no politician would ever want to use in context with homeland policy. Okay, nice idea. Now let's implement it. The first thing that Senator Conroy needs is cooperation with those organisations providing the community with connectivity to the internet. There are two possible outcomes here. A positive, yeah, sure, we'll help you with that, or you've got to be kidding, bugger off. What do you think the result would be? History now shows that the latter was the response of all the major ISPs. Some, iiNet, even offered to help out to prove that the minister was proposing something that simply wouldn't work. Funnily enough, that offer was not taken up by the minister's office. Late last year, a list was finally published containing the names of six small ISPs who the government had chosen to be guinea pigs in its Australia-wide filtering system. The next and possibly most dangerous part of the whole process was to start compiling a list of websites that would be blocked by these ISPs. This onerous task was given to ACMA, the Australian Communications and Media Authority. This list, in anyone's terms, would be a blacklist, a list that, if it ever found its way into the public arena, would be extremely detrimental to the government's cause, because it would be considered a censorship list, a list of sites that the Rudd government didn't want us to see. Last week, the inevitable happened. This list became public through the website WikiLeak. Not only does it look like the government needs legislation for the ISP's compliance in the implementation of this filter, but it's now under criticism about what is on and not on the list. The list that was supposed to protect our children online, and the lack of security surrounding the list. On one hand, the government doesn't want to be seen as censors of the internet. And on the other, it wants to block access to sites which it believes is detrimental to the nation. The two concepts are mutually exclusive. There seems to be a growing resistance to the Rudd government's policy from many factions of society within Australia. At what point does the government re-evaluate its policy? At the moment, getting any form of legislation through the Senate to force ISPs to comply seems to be a lost cause. So what rabbit is Conroy going to pull from his hat? Chances are the hat is empty, and his deck of cards was four cards short. The good news is he still has the Joker, which he might just have to play to disperse the perfect storm.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Susan McLean, former Victoria Police cyber cop, joins the panel to discuss the current trends in cyberbullying. Susan has a 27-year background in law enforcement and is considered an expert in the area of cyber safety and young people online. Microsoft's IE8 officially hits the streets. Lydia Davis talks Facebook, and Adam Turner joins us live in the studio. First up, though, here is the latest happenings from the tech world this week with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, battle lines are drawn in the government blacklist fiasco. Facebook incurs the wrath of 175 million members. The ACCC launches legal action against Telstra over ADSL exchange access, and Microsoft unveils Internet Explorer 8. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The federal government went into damage control last week after its top secret NetFilter blacklist was published for the world to see. Renegade website WikiLeaks published the blacklist, which was revealed to contain nearly 2,400 banned websites, many of them incorrect or inappropriately included. And IT Wire revealed that the Telstra-owned Yellow Pages and popular technology forum Whirlpool are just two sites now facing fines of up to $11,000 per day for linking to incorrectly blacklisted sites like the Marucci boarding kennels and a Queensland dental surgery. The incident last week highlights the paradoxical nature of the government's plan, which is that no one can link to or access a prescribed list of websites which no one is allowed to see or publish. The blacklist, which forms the basis of Australia's proposed mandatory internet filtering, is supposed to target child pornography. Instead, the list also appears to be comprised of online gambling sites, YouTube links, and regular pornography. Contributing in no small part to the fiasco, Communications Minister Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy denied that WikiLeaks had published the true ACMA blacklist. This comment was made despite sites such as Whirlpool being issued with a link deletion notice by the ACMA after it allegedly posted links to banned websites. Shadow Minister for Communications, Senator the Honourable Nick Minchin, said that Labor's plan to implement a mandatory net filter is misguided and deeply unpopular. Senator Minchin said that Labor's plan was fundamentally flawed because the banned list was by necessity distributed to hundreds of ISPs.
For that system to work, you've got to distribute the blacklist to every internet service provider in Australia, of which there are hundreds. And it has been one of our concerns with this proposal, that the blacklist is therefore in a great deal many more hands than is currently the case, with the potential for it to leak with very significant and dangerous consequences.
WikiLeaks, which publishes anonymous submissions alleging government and corporate misconduct, is hosted in Sweden and may be immune from prosecution under Australian law. But Senator Conroy said last week that the ACMA was investigating the matter and is considering a range of possible actions, including referral to the Australian Federal Police. Mr. Conroy added that any Australian involved in making this content publicly available would be at serious risk of criminal prosecution. In other news this week, popular online social network Facebook has incurred the wrath of its minions after changing the tried-and-true design of the website. Of 800,000 Facebook users to vote in an online poll last week, 94% said they didn't like the changes to users' homepages and profiles. Changes to users' homepages include the new status update question, "What's on your mind?", adding real-time Twitter-like updates and tools to allow people to organise and filter messages from people listed as friends. Facebook has been under increasing pressure of late from competitors like Twitter and was also left red-faced in February after changes to its terms of use, which suggested Facebook would retain personal data even after someone deleted their account. Australian competition watchdog the ACCC has commenced legal action against Telstra for allegedly making false claims that there was no space in several key telephone exchanges for competitors to install their own ADSL equipment. The Trade Practices Act requires Telstra to permit access seekers to install equipment in its telephone exchanges in order to supply ADSL broadband to consumers using the unbundled local loop or line sharing service. The ACCC alleges that Telstra has refused access seeker requests for interconnection at seven key metropolitan exchanges by claiming that there was no capacity available on the main distribution frames. The ACCC further alleges that there was capacity available or that capacity could have been made available. Telstra's Group Managing Director, Public Policy and Communications, Mr. David Quilty, said the legal action was a complete waste of court time and taxpayer money. Mr. Quilty said, "The ACCC is suing us for something we proactively and voluntarily reviewed and fixed a year ago. This case relates to a small number of inadvertent process issues." The matter has been listed for a directions hearing in the Federal Court on the 17th of April. And Microsoft has released its next version of Internet Explorer, designed to enhance browsing speed and internet security. Microsoft's Internet Explorer Group General Manager, Mr. Dean Hachimovich, said that Internet Explorer 8 is important because Microsoft wants PC users to have a great experience every day when surfing the web. IE 8 is Microsoft's first major browser update since August 2006 and addresses many issues on the Internet Explorer wishlist, including the addition of so-called accelerators to facilitate copying and pasting between different web pages. The new version of IE also includes an enhancement to the built-in toolbar search box. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
Now, you said you'd never get a Nokia ever again.
I must admit, the device did look really nice.
It's untouchable by legislation.
100 megabits per second is very, very fast by today's standards.
These new hard drives are all solid state. Now, another bit of interesting gossip.
The speculation is it's going to be a paid upgrade this time around.
People think, and people who buy devices think, that if it's got less buttons on it must be easier to use, and that is not true.
Now, Telstra, big news this week.
Lithium iron phosphate batteries.
The network speed plummets.
That's impressive.
But he's been gazumped.
He has been gazumped. That's a very good way of putting it, JD.
You just laugh quietly and go, yeah, no worries, Dr. Ron. You're relying on
when
maybe...
When you not have access to USB.
Well, maybe you...
What sort of a techhead are you?
Pocket full of crackers.
That's the one. Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello again. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here at the console this evening. You can see us on the webcam too, and you'll be viewing Dr. Ron. JD's in this evening. Okay, with Graham walking across in front. He's and there again. Oh, he's used to television. How are you, boys?
Very well, Andrew. How are you this week?
Oh, look, the voice is a bit croaky, but I think we'll get through there. We'll persist. I couldn't resist coming in this evening just because of the amazing amount of things that has gone on in the world of technology this week.
My voice was a bit croaky too. I was recording the news. I was struggling, but we got there.
There's a bit of it out there, isn't there? JD, how are you travelling?
My voice is fine so far.
Fantastic. Well, if we all fall in a heap, it's all yours, baby. Hey, interesting news this week too. We were off air, I think, digressing a little bit about the Apple history that was popped up on the New York Times website. Did you have a look at that? There was a wonderful pictorial thing, because I think you tried sending email about it. But
I did. I got stuck by our own spam filter.
Yeah, it's good like that. It works well.
The New York Times have got a great little special. It's nice and concise and talks about the rise and fall of Steve Jobs within Apple. And does a pretty good job. Nice summary. It's missing a few bits of...
Oh, I'm sure it is for a small thing like that. But it was. I just thought it was really a concise little package about the history of Apple from... And there's some great photos of Woz and all that sort of stuff standing there with the 2E and the Apple II and all that as well.
In the wooden box with the dodgy keyboard.
That's it. Yep. Absolutely. So the
Apple IIe, that was a walk down memory lane. They had those at school when I was at school.
And when I was at school.
There you go.
Yeah, what do you know?
5 1/4 inch discs.
I think I had one of those as a kid.
I had the tape drive model originally.
Did you really?
I did.
Tape drive.
Tape drive.
The sad thing, Dr. Wrong, he'll still have it.
I've still got 5 1/4
inch. I'm sure you do, yeah.
Still got 5 1/4 inch discs at home. I can't bring myself to throw them away. They belong in the museum.
I can upsize you there. I've got 8 inch discs. You remember the 8 inch
floppies? I do. I never used 8 inch floppy discs, but I know what you're talking about. They belong in a museum.
Blast from the past, wasn't it? Also, tonight we're going to be talking about cyber safety. Susan McLean joins us and in her new role. And she's out there freelancing now, which is a wonderful thing to do. So Susan will be talking to us about cyber safety very shortly. Adam Turner is rumoured to... I've just been handed an HTC Dream that says, running late, coming in hot, send at 8:03.
I thought that was pertinent.
Adam Turner will be arriving, according to the HTC Dream that's just been passed around the studio. So there'll be lots to talk about this evening, but first cab off the rank, Internet Explorer 8 officially came out of beta during the course of the week, and I've put the proper version on. I was running a beta version of it recently. They've fixed a lot of problems. They've allegedly sped it up and all sorts of things along those lines. Have any of you guys had the pleasure of loading up Microsoft's latest offering of web exploring software?
Well, I can't, so that's easy.
Yes, you can. You run Boot Camp, don't you?
No, I run a PowerPC Mac still.
Really? So you can't run any of those sort of good things?
No.
Don't they make a version for the PowerPC Mac?
No, well, they don't make it for the Mac at all now.
That's a bit sad.
Mm, very sad. I'm disappointed. Well, you can tell, can't you?
Not really. You're a Firefox man, aren't you?
I am, yes.
Yeah.
Internet Explorer has been in beta for about 2 years now, IE8 that is, and it's finally come to the fruition from when IE7 came out. It was about 2006, I think, was the last offering from Microsoft. So it's taken a while, and from a web developer's point of view, the incompatibilities of IE7 and IE6, for that matter, and the rest of the WC3 world has been quite obvious. A lot of people have not had a good web surfing experience through IE8, and I think that's half the reason why we've all gone to Firefox and Safari and other exploring devices like that.
You still have to keep it around because there's all those web applications that don't work on anything but IE, something
or
other.
Yeah, any Microsoft device, any Microsoft service that you go to does a test, and if you're not running IE, then it doesn't want to know about you. The other interesting thing, though, is in Windows 7, you can turn Internet Explorer off.
You can. We spoke about this last week or the week before. You can.
And I think that's because of the stuff that's going on in Europe at the moment with Microsoft and their antitrust lawsuits and the likes.
Well, they've been hounded by the European version of the ACCC for so long that they've finally decided to get preemptive about this and make it so it can be disabled. Yeah, yeah. The actual engine that drives Internet Explorer is still working, and it forms a fundamental part of the operating system. It has to be there for Microsoft's operating system to work. But the actual
because the desktop's
Explorer,
a website, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's getting that way. It's really getting that way.
Yeah. All right. So watch this space. Send us in your experiences if you're online now. Come and say good day. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
What are some of the new things that you identified, Andrew, that you noticed when you loaded it up? I haven't loaded it up yet myself. It's something I'm meaning to do. Just haven't had time to scratch myself this last week. But I definitely have to look at it, though. It's something I need to
It's look and feel is traditionally IE. Yep. And I really haven't had a great sort of look and see how much faster it is, because I ask you for accelerators and things like that at the moment. But from a web development point of view, there's no longer any more white lines after server-side includes and things like that. Not wanting to get too technical in it or anything like that, but it has. It's starting to deal with the standards of the internet a lot better than its predecessor did. So early days yet. We'll wait and see what happens, but it loads up really well. If you can get onto it through the Microsoft site, I had to fight to get it from time to time because you've got to make sure that you use pop-up block-free things to download. Otherwise, you just can't see the little backdoor click here that it does. And anyway, I eventually got it, and it works reasonably well on both Vista and on Windows XP.
Very good. So it's the first major browser update since August 06.
Yeah, that was a bit exciting.
It's been a bit of a wait.
What long were using, time between drinks, yeah.
Yeah, what we're using before IE6, IE5, I suppose. I'm trying to think what that was like and what the... IE6 introduced the tabbed browsing for Microsoft for the first time.
Yeah,
like,
that was that? In... Yeah, from because Firefox were doing it back then.
That's right. They've been doing it for ages, and Microsoft thought we finally should get on board with this. And I think that's the first browser we saw tabbed browsing in was Internet Explorer version 6.
Yes. Anyway...
7, sorry.
Load it up, have a go, see what you think. Now, Dr. Ron, correspondence, you have plenty to be entered into this evening, apparently. Allegedly.
Yeah.
You're on holidays again, so you're reading all the emails.
On holidays, reading emails. Yeah. I just had to say hello to three new forum users. If you're not a forum user, then why not? There's nearly 200 users there on the forum.
There's good community, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a complex domain name, though, to remember. forum.techtalkradio.com.au. That's
about you have problems
difficult
with that,
as
do
it gets. As it gets.
Like chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Well, you should be logged onto that now.
Yeah, you should.
Farhead 304, hello. Real D, hello. And Red Bull 70, they're all new users on the forum. They've signed up in the last few
not
weeks.
Not spammers. You haven't had to remove them surreptitiously from the website.
We had a spammer that appeared and disappeared almost as quickly, not so long ago. But
he did, didn't he?
Yeah. Thanks for pointing him out too, JD. Now, Justin's now a moderator on the forum as well,
so he can
hop on top of problem posters like that as well.
Watch out! I don't know what I'm doing.
No, just
you can delete users left, right, and centre.
If in doubt, click delete.
That's okay then.
Yes.
Very good. Okay, welcome aboard to the forum, to all those new users. Lovely to be here. Lovely to have you along. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is what Dr. Ron was saying. Come and join us now before we go on live. You can ask Susan McLean a question. Yes, or anybody else who's... Adam's just arriving as we speak, and you can ask him a question too, like, why was he late?
Andrew was talking about the webcam before as well. If you're wanting to have a look
at
the webcam,
online,
or you're wanting to listen to us via that method, you can go to ustream.tv/techtalkradioau and click on the Watch Now link. It'll say that we're broadcasting live. If you're not listening to us live, that's okay as well. Go to ustream.tv/techtalkradioau. And you'll be able to look at an archived or recorded version of the program, if that's what tickles your fancy.
Let's talk about our wonderful new mobile communications these days. Dr. Ron, you've moved into the world of the dream, the Google phone.
I'm living the Google dream.
Yeah. Is it everything you hoped it to be, or have you got a few reservations about the dream now?
Look, it's my new best friend. I'm really, really enjoying using it, and it's terrific. And since
It's been
a couple of weeks. Since I sold my soul to Google, and I'm channeling all my email through there, it's all very tightly integrated, and it's working extremely well. there are a couple of gripes, and I've actually done a blog post on this, so I've given it a little bit of a review on the surgery. That's at www.drron.com.au. You can have a look at that. The main gripe with it, above anything else, is the battery life. Sometimes it'll last a day, sometimes it won't. I was working from home the other day, and I had the Wi-Fi interface on all the time, and I was looking for applications, I was downloading stuff off the internet, and I was making a few phone calls, and it got to about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and suddenly, battery just died. Battery died completely, and I had to go and find a charger. It died to the point of the phone actually switching off, not just warning me that it was getting low.
You can take a spare battery with you.
Well, it is.
At least it's not like at least it's not soldered in like the
Apple.
Oh, he's here. Who's that voice? Hey, Adam's here.
Hi, Adam.
Headphones on.
What was that surreptitious remark about Apples?
Oh, I was just saying you can actually replace the battery in most of those phones.
Unlike an iPod or an iPhone. That's correct. It is, Justin. You can take a charge battery with you. The other thing which Graham actually pointed out the previous week was that it charges off a little USB port. So if you're in the car, you could actually have a cigarette lighter adapter and you can plug it in to charge it.
Yeah, if you had a real battery too, you would need to do that.
In your car kit, you mean, because you're running hands-free, yeah?
I have it sitting on the seat beside me.
With the law enforcement in the room.
And I have my Bluetooth headset in. You'll be pleased to know. No traffic fines for me, you know.
Okay, well, I've moved up to the world of Nokia, as you know, the new E71, which is a lovely little device. There's two applications I'm running on it, which I believe you're having great difficulty with there, Dr. Ron. One of which is Google Maps and Latitude.
This is frustrating. This is not the fault of the Google phone. This is the fault of...
On the Google phone and you can't load Google Maps? What's going on
here? This is the fault of Google and their association with Skype. And the problem is that if I want to run the Google Lite client on this phone, I can only download it through the Android market. The Australian Android market doesn't support it.
Is it like the iPhone shop now, is it? They're becoming... I thought they were going to open it up and anyone could put something in and it was all free, but no?
Well, for whatever reason, Skype are withholding... They're withholding Skype Lite from the Australian Android market, and I don't know why.
If you ran a VPN on the phone, could you trick them into thinking you're in the US and then access the US Android marketplace?
Possibly, and that's my next step, and I don't know how to do that yet, Adam.
Yeah, I'll talk to you about that later.
That'd be really good, because I'd love to be able to use Skype Lite on my Android phone.
Now, I don't think we investigated this with you. The Android marketplace, is that something that's only on the phone, or can you download it to your PC?
At this stage, you can only download it to your phone. It's not something you can access from
like
a PC.
It's not like iTunes, you can...
No, it's not. So I need to be doing VPNing on this actual handset.
One of the things about the phone is it's designed to exist on its own, unlike an iPhone, which is sort of designed to exist in tandem with a computer.
Yep.
So everything is direct to the phone, the Android marketplace and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yep. No, this is the issue that I'm faced with. So even if I could actually find it, well, I can't find it on the internet from a PC. I wilfed away 8 hours the other day trying to actually find somewhere to download the installer, but I couldn't actually find it.
What was I looking for?
Ah, that's it.
We got distracted by all sorts of other emails coming in.
Yes, indeed.
So one thing we have tried, Dr. Ron and I, this evening, is Skype on these new devices where you can actually use your mobile phone to make voice over IP calls if you've got a Skype account. Now, this works incredibly well, even mobile, as we discussed today. We replaced the old calling on the Next-G third generation networky thing, and we went to Skype whilst mobile. And can I say the call quality was just as good as using the telephone? And it cost me only a few moments of my 4,000 minutes of free Skype time I've got.
I think I was saying to you while we were talking, the old adage, a chain's only as strong as its weakest link. The weakest link in that whole process would have been the networking into your phone. And as long as the mobile network can support a reasonable data rate to and from your handset, The call quality was going to be okay.
The weakest link used to also be the processing speed of the phone, but the phones are getting better, so it's probably not so much of a problem now.
You're right, they're getting better and better every day, and Andrew's is working brilliantly.
Now, the reason why we mentioned this is because this is the ideal solution if you have friends, relatives, whatever, overseas, and you want to ring them on a regular basis and you don't want to break the bank, because your mobile device becomes your Skype device. So if they choose to ring you either from a PC or from another handset, which is Skype enabled, it's just like using the telephone, only the cost is just not there, providing you've got the plan or whatever it is with the ISP. So a really, really good way of keeping in touch with those overseas. Give it a try if you haven't.
With a lot of the plans now as well, they're offering you Skype minutes. Yeah. And I think the plan that I'm on offers me like something like 4,000 Skype minutes a month or something. And if I'm not using that, they're going to waste.
Should I ask the question? The Apple Store, anyone? Does that have Skype on it these days? Can you download Skype for the iPhone?
I think there's a Skype chat, but not a Skype voice. Is that right?
I haven't played with it. I'm an Engine customer, so I can't play with Skype.
Well, I'm with Internode and I use their VoIP. But I think, well, I'm looking here and I can see there's definitely a Skype chat application for the iPhone. I'm not sure if there's a Skype VoIP application. Although I did hear, I think there's a Freshtel iPhone application. Freshtel's another VoIP provider.
There are a few VoIP applications.
Which surprises me because Apple are funny like that.
Yeah, it may not be actually on the iTunes store. It could be on the CD
site.
Yeah.
All right. We'll find out a bit more about how iTunes, iPhone's going to handle that, and they're not too distant. I'm sure it'll be a giver. It's got to be good. Anyway, wait and see. Earlier this week also, the Bureau of Meteorology have announced the fact that they're spending copious quantities of money on a new supercomputer on the odd chance that they might get the forecast right. Is it worth spending $30-odd million on two new boxes?
Yes.
So that they've got half.
I love supercomputers. Have you seen these things? They're awesome.
Yes, I have. We're referring to, and it's still on the TikTok radio website last week when Justin sent across a wonderful thing, which was what to do with SSD, which is the solid-state hard drives, and how to raid them all up, and you can actually get Windows to work instantly. But anyway, the Australian Bureau of Meteorology and the Australian National University spending $30 million on two new computers which will accurately predict cyclones, tsunamis and the effects of climate change. Well, I think that's pretty evident. I don't know whether you need a computer for that, but I guess they do. I wonder if it's going to be here in Melbourne in the BOM Centre or whether it's going to be at a university somewhere in Canberra or something like that.
They'd be holding off till Windows 7's release, wouldn't they?
Well, it says here we'll work in tandem with a more powerful twin based in Canberra. So maybe it will be in Melbourne because the last few Bureau supercomputers have been in Melbourne.
Mm. Well, the CSIRO are based here in town too, I believe. So maybe they should just keep it all together.
To XP though, surely.
You were laughing. You're thinking, Dr. Ron, my poor misguided friend. Of course, I'll be running some sort of Apple operating system. I won't be going into any Windows.
Well, they might be running a flavor of Unix anyway.
I think that would be more than likely what they will be doing. Yeah, some flavor of Unix.
Very good.
But Unix is designed to work on.
It's got 1,500 Sunblade server nodes in it.
Oh.
1,500?
Yeah.
So each one of those is like its own single board computer, is that right?
Yeah, 1,500. Boards of processors in them, and each one of those boards has probably got more than one processor on it.
Whoa.
So a lot.
Quad or 8 processors.
And they can still only forecast the weather into seven days in the future. Crikey.
If you notice, they don't put their anything on the line there when it comes to long-term forecasting. As soon as they hit that seven-day maximum, they all go very quiet.
And they were very reluctant to go to seven. It was a long time before they pushed out.
It was, wasn't it? It was.
Well, anyway. They're trying to cover their backside. You can't blame them.
But what are they going to do? It's only the weather. It's a best guess at best, isn't it? Anyway, hopefully it's a bit better than that now with $30 million sort of in that right.
It'll be running Sun flavor of Linux.
Someone will come Solaris. And do their jobs on... I wonder how quickly it'll rip a DVD. Sorry, the question had to be asked. Anyway, also in other news, the ACCC are going to sue Telstra over something. You mentioned this earlier in the news, Dr. Ron, about access to telephone exchanges, how Telstra are coming back and saying, no, we have no space, and the ACCC going, but we think you do. So as a result, they're going to be sued for it. What do you reckon?
It's interesting. Obviously, Telstra were responding by saying, look, it was a problem, we fixed it, and how pedantic that the ACCC are actually pursuing this as an issue. But the fact remains that if it was an issue, if they've identified that this was a problem, then it still needs to be followed up. It still could be something there which they need to seek redress to through the courts. So the fact that Mr. Quilty is actually saying that no, there's no problem there anymore doesn't mean that it's not still incumbent upon the ACCC to investigate and to prosecute them or take legal action against them if that's what's needed. I think that Telstra constantly need this sort of pressure in order for them to perform as they're supposed to. If the ACCC doesn't apply this type of pressure to them, then you're going to find that just slowly but surely
they're
wandering off on their own little merry little path and you ain't seen nothing yet sort of thing.
So you mentioned a bit of a poke. You reckon that's what they need every 6 months, someone to come and rattle Telstra's cage to say, hang on, we're watching type sort of thing, and this is what they're doing.
They need constant poking. Yes. Of course they do. What do you think, Adam?
Absolutely.
In
Can
agreement?
We just say a cheerio to fake Stephen Conroy if he's listening?
Oh, yes. Wasn't that fantastic? An insider. That was good. I was reading an article about that today, about why he did it and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Very interesting. But yes.
And also a cheerio to fake Justin Milne, who's one of the Telstra PR people, and someone started faking him on Twitter last week as well. Very funny stuff.
See, this is what I like about Twitter. It brings out the best of people, doesn't it? You know, microblogging at its best.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, Dr. Ron, you've got some interesting news about Google removing some UK street views.
I do.
You wrote it on the rundown.
No, I probably did. Yeah. In Britain, the Google has removed several images from Street View after it had just been launched the previous day, which was quite funny. They bowed to pressure. Street View, of course, lets you see the 360-degree ground-level views of streets and roads, boulevards, and the images are all stitched together from Google vans that have driven around painstakingly and taken photography everywhere they've driven. The Google spokesperson confirmed that only hours after launching in the UK, images depicting a man... This should have been a odd spot. Sorry. Images depicting a man vomiting outside a London pub and another man leaving a sex shop were removed from the site. So,
you've got what you've got coming for you in a lot of respects, haven't you? But seriously,
Google wouldn't look at any of these images. They wouldn't vet hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of
images. Exactly.
They would just automatically just stitch them all together, make them available.
And wait for people to complain.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a bit like the TIO, isn't it? You put out a new service and plan, and think, I think we'll get away with this one. Uh-oh, no, too many complaints.
Wait and see how many complaints roll in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there you go. So they've bowed to a bit of pressure there. But they have Google have actually said that if they receive complaints or there are issues, then they will act upon them. And we've already seen that, I think, here in Australia, where we had that as an odd spot a month or a couple of months ago, where there was a man sitting on his outside toilet in a house in South Melbourne or Port Melbourne, and the Google van snapped him, and that image got taken down fairly fast, but not fast enough for it to be propagated around the world.
There's sites now dedicated to Google Art or something like that. Anyway, a quick question in on the chat tonight. Anyone can take it. No mention of OS 3 tonight for the iPhone?
Well, we haven't got there yet.
Hang on. We can only talk about one thing at a time.
That's good.
We haven't talked about Freeview yet either.
Absolutely. No, they've got that coming up later on. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
From which angle do we attack?
You've got a Black Monday fear for malware spikes.
That forum user has been executed with extreme prejudice.
Fly on the wall material and
kill expletives, I suspect.
I don't need my internet filter.
Dr. Ron's test tube aliens.
He's had a few.
Big deal.
There's all sorts of interesting things in there, too.
Entertaining.
Wife acceptability factor.
WAF.
The WAF.
Informative.
Digital certificates as well.
Independent.
I reckon Adam might have something to say about it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That's for your iPod, sweetheart.
She said, what's an iPod?
Twitter? We do. Why not follow us? For the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed, follow TTR2008 or visit techtalkradio.com.au to see what all the presenters are currently tweeting.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Facebook is a wonderful thing.
Facebook.
I don't use it. Do you, Dr. Ron? You do, don't you? You're a Facebooker.
I do use it, and I'm getting increasingly disgruntled with it, as is 94% of the world's Facebook population.
That's it. That was the statistics for the day. You should see the webcam, everybody, at the moment. So why is all this racket about? They've changed they're now becoming like Twitter, have they? They've become and changed their look and feel and the likes?
Yeah, but unlike Twitter, they've done it so it's really, really dumb, and everyone's really, really angry with it.
I sort of gathered that because Lydia Davis, who is our US correspondent, who is currently on vacation, in Mexico somewhere, filed this report for us earlier during the week in relation to her look and feel about what she was thinking about Facebook. Now, with her report, she was quite, I don't know, direct about it.
Was
now,
she?
I'm interested to know your feelings once we've heard the view from the valley, but I'd just like to say that there were no arrows or cuckoos injured in this report.
Oh, good.
Last week, Facebook changed the homepages of its users, and today, user anger is mounting, specifically over founder Mark Zuckerberg's idiotic attempt to channel Twitter by creating a stream of the status updates that looks remarkably similar to Twitter's timeline. And yes, I know, Facebook had status updates even before Twitter was a twinkle in its creators' eyes, but they never looked like this before. Unfortunately, this redesign meant moving and even removing many of the options that users had become accustomed to. I mean, what was he thinking? case in point, moving the best of or highlights into a sidebar that users can't control. Can't control. And according to one of my favourite Silicon Valley rags, ValleyWag, it's leading to all kinds of interesting situations. For instance, a woman complained about not being able to delete things from the highlight sidebar because one of her friends is also friends with her ex-husband. The friend tagged the ex in a photo, and it's clearly become popular enough to wind up in the ex-wife's highlight sidebar. So now, every time she signs in, there's a photo of her ex-husband waiting to greet her. Good move, Facebook. Another person complained about the same sidebar because several of her friends had joined a group that uses an X-rated photo for its logo. Turns out, having several friends join a group puts that group and its logo in your highlights. So this woman is now greeted with a lovely, albeit explicit, photo every time she logs in. So don't forget, they can't do anything about this. Now clearly, this can't continue and users are already protesting. Since the redesign, a third-party Facebook app has been polling users on its new layout. As of recording this, just over 5% of the nearly 800,000 respondents like the new design. Everyone else just thinks it's a shocker. Over on ReadWriteWeb, we created a word cloud of the most recent comments by users, and it clearly demonstrates the current sentiment. The most often used words are hate, change, back, awful, and of course, granted, right now, those who dislike the Facebook layout only account for 0.5% of the total population of Facebook. But you've got to wonder whether this is the beginning of yet another disastrous example of Facebook's poor choices. You'll remember the nightmare last year surrounding Beacon, the advertising system that shared your purchasing data with your friends, going against Facebook's stated privacy policy in almost every instance, and its unfortunate beginnings, a default opt-out setting, and a launch that gave users no way to opt out. And Zuckerberg's response after the fact, when he said, "We've made a lot of mistakes building this feature, but we've made even more with how we've handled them. We simply did a bad job with this release, and I apologise for it." You'd think, would you not, that the Beacon fiasco would have been an important lesson. You know, think first. But no, Zuckerberg was again apologetic this year when he revoked the changes Facebook made to its terms of service. Again, after a massive backlash from users. Well, perhaps this new design will prove third time lucky for this young Harvard dropout, who might just learn that the f*** and fix it later strategy just doesn't work.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I think they've got the build it and they will come type sort of scenario over there at Facebook. Now, what do you reckon, Dr. Ron? I wouldn't like to have a, you know, even an acquaintance who's got an image and apparently it gets put in your sidebar for the whole world to see because you have no control over that. Mm. Sorry, you're on a different microphone. Try now. I'll get it yet.
Keeping you on your toes.
Thank you. Sorry, yes. he's moved around the panel one and he's on a different fade.
Pick a mic, any mic.
Absolutely.
Pick a mic, any mic. Yeah, it's an interesting strategy that they've adopted and one, as Lydia said, that is not necessarily going to be successful for them. They've tried to do too much. They're obviously feeling the pressure from the microblogging service Twitter.
Absolutely.
They're trying to make it so that the status updates just cascade and change down the screen as you're watching, but it's not working as they'd hoped. It's not being received as well as they've hoped. And there's a lot of angst out there.
Mm. Adam, have you got an opinion on... You're a Facebooker,
well,
right?
I use both. And Facebook drives me nuts because people just
both
use
being
it
what,
to tell
Adam?
Me, Facebook and Twitter.
Yep.
And Facebook people just use it to tell me what they had for lunch. But now the same people double up. So when it tells you through Facebook and Twitter at the same time, I don't want real-time updates from Facebook because I don't care what my friends had for lunch. I'm more interested in real-time updates from Twitter because people use that differently, except for the people who use it like it's Facebook.
Yeah, I've actually had a look at some of the people who follow us. And you
people
do,
are nodding in the room.
You go there and you see them. I've just had lunch. I've just been here and it's like, who cares?
There are certain IT journos. I won't mention their names, but there are certain well-known journos who insist on telling us that tomato sandwiches are better with salt and pepper.
You keep going on about that. It's obviously something near and dear to your heart.
I'm hoping he's listening and he gets the point.
Yeah, very good.
Just name names.
Yeah.
Hey, scones are good, by the way.
Yes, those scones are fantastic.
Alison, thank you very much. He can come again. So, yeah, we're indulging here in the studio. If you're looking on the webcam, there's some lovely scones going around. We'll just have one. Go to the kitchen and see what you've got in the fridge. That'd be good. All right, moving right along. Susan McLean is no stranger to Tech Talk Radio. She's been in a previous occasion, probably about 2 years ago.
I think it was about two years ago. Yeah.
Anyway, Susan back then was a member of Victoria Police, and she was heading up the cyber issues in our schools about bullying and harassment and all those sorts of other interesting things. We've run her program over our summer breaks. And still gets lots and lots of interesting news and questions about it. And so she joins us again today. She's wearing a different hat this time. She's got rid of the old blue one, and she's now out there cyber safety advisor for her own business and consulting and doing all those sorts of things, which I think is a very amicable thing in this day and age of doing it for yourself. Welcome back to the Tech Talk Radio studio, Susan.
Good evening. Sorry, I'm in the wrong time zone.
Oh, well, there could be someone listening to us. There normally is on the other side of the world. So tell me, cybersecurity, we haven't spoken to you for about 2 years or so. What's changed, if anything at all? I would have been guessing things are probably getting a little bit worse than better at the moment.
They are getting worse, and I think the sheer volume of young people in particular that have access to technology and the internet has grown out of all proportion to what it was 2 years ago.
Now, we've been talking about Twitter and Facebook. Facebook was around when you were in last, but Twitter's new.
Twitter's new.
Twitter's microblogging. Twitter is designed to be connected to your phone via SMS and the likes, and people can, or I should say anyone can actually send a text to Twitter, and it comes out on everybody else's devices in a lot of respects. What impact is that having in the world of social?
I think that it's only really starting to have an impact here. I spent 5 weeks in the UK over Christmas. And every single minute of the day on radio, there was a Twitter update from someone or someone reporting on something that had happened on Twitter. Mm-hmm. At that point in time in January, it really hadn't taken off here as much as it had in the UK. Since I've been back, yes, you hear about it all the time. But I think people, to my knowledge at the moment, haven't really been misusing it. In the same way that they're misusing some of the other applications.
Because of the small text size in Twitter, do you think it's still likely to be exploited for bullying or something like that?
Absolutely. There is nothing that would surprise me with what kids do online.
You're an idiot. Not. It's only three words. It'll fit.
And you can predispose that. You put that in your presets in your phone. And the thing is that the kids in the classrooms that have those under the benches, and when the teacher goes out, we'll quickly into text and that could be detrimental to anyone who receives, I would have thought. So.
Absolutely. And people sort of think that, well, what is cyberbullying and should I really be concerned? But, you know, in the old days, people do get bullied and harassed and there's no doubt about it. But the perversive nature that is cyberbullying is really bad. And I think that the community as a whole has to get away from the fact that when you hear the term bullying, people seem to think, oh, it's just a school thing. It doesn't really matter. Kids will grow out of it, you know, get on with life. But when it comes through via an SMS or it's posted online or it's on YouTube or it's on Facebook or MySpace or any other social networking, it's there to stay. And it's adults will say, well, don't read it or delete it and then you won't see it or don't read your text messages or turn your phone off. But they're adult concepts. They're not concepts that really gel with the generation of today. They want to be connected 24/7. It's how they've been brought up. So we have to make sure that they have the skills and knowledge to deal with these problems. And also we need to educate people about correct behaviours online. You know, cyberspace is no different to the real world. There are rules, there are laws, but they're just not that well known.
How are we going in educational forums, such as in primary schools, in secondary schools with teachers and social workers within those environments? Are they catching up with what's going on out there?
They're trying to. And I think if you speak to any school principal anywhere in Australia, they will tell you the number one problem confronting them from a school perspective is cyber harassment of their students. 99.9% if it doesn't happen at school, because they have pretty good filtering systems at school. And look, I know anyone can type, you know, get Facebook at school and, you know, they can bypass the filters and things like that. But predominantly, the peer bullying is occurring at night or after school.
Peer bullying and night, you mean like as in after hours on their personal mobiles and emails and things?
And even on say, a school laptop computer, but it's happening out of the school environment. It becomes a school problem because the next day at school, the poor year-level coordinator or the welfare person spends all day running around trying to work out who said what to whom, and who's at fault, and you've got to, you know, you've got to. I've had situations where kids have refused to come to school because they're fearful of what occurred at night. They come to school and the rumours are spreading. So you can't just say it's not our problem or try and push the buck sideways. It's a community problem, and unless everyone tackles it, we are going to have major problems.
you say community problem, that means politicians are becoming involved in that sort of thing as well. What's going on in our hallowed halls of cabinet rooms? Are they starting to develop policies and things?
The hallowed halls of our cabinet rooms, I think the wheels turn very, very slowly there.
Mm.
And I think that's a problem with everything to do with cyber safety. The technology is exploding. It is moving forward at such a fast rate that by the time anything is sorted out, policy-wise, legislation-wise, it's been and gone. They've missed the boat.
Do you think some of our ministers are actually being a little bit, how should I say, distracted by other things as opposed to looking after cyber bullying? Because you look at what Conroy's doing at the moment, the Minister for Communications and everything else that he's in charge of, because of the broadband thing, because of the internet filtering and every other thing that falls under his portfolio, do you think that cyber bullying is not given the attention that it really deserves these days?
I think immediately you use the term bullying in any context, people immediately think, oh, it's just a little school thing. It doesn't really impact upon anyone and it's not really that important. And I think that, yes, there are some revolting and inappropriate websites out there. There are young people that are solicited and groomed online, without a doubt. But the cyberbullying and harassment that I see on a day-to-day basis is horrendous.
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Is there a technical solution to this or is there other ways to solve it?
Look, there are technical solutions in that you can block certain things on your computer. Your parents could put keylogger software on to monitor every keystroke that, you know, you type in. You can set up a Google alert on your child to see, you know, where they might pop up in cyberspace. But realistically, and what I've learned from my studies in America and some studies I've done in the UK, is that it's all about education. We have to try and prevent this from happening in the first place rather than running around trying to pick up the pieces afterwards.
Okay, now you've got my respect.
So Susan, what you're saying is... You've passed.
What, I passed the test.
What you're saying is that it's not the answer then for the government just to introduce a national net filter, and that's not going to be the be-all and end-all for
absolutely
to curb cyberbullying.
No. And look, if you look at the fact that the government, just before the last federal election, put out free internet filters for Australia, all Australian families, I think, could access two or three.
That's right. And they could
filters.
Be downloaded free of charge. And if yes, you thought that was an appropriate thing to do, you could install it on your home computer.
And you could even write away for it or ring up for it if you couldn't manage to download it.
And how successful was that
system? I think
system?
The uptake of that was in around 5% of internet users actually took up that offer.
And it was terrible software.
And it was, and you know, young Tom Woods from Melbourne managed to crack it in a very short period of time.
So what's to say that any internet filtering can't be broken by Tom Woods as well? Like, it looks like, as I think one of Grant Hackett, I think it was, one of the ISP people, probably, I think he's a swimmer, but someone came out from one of the ISPs and said basically, yeah, we're trying to protect kids, but they don't want to be protected. They want to be able to hack this sort of thing, and that's what they do, more so for a challenge, really.
It would become a challenge to them. I mean, if you put a challenge in front of any child for anything, you know, forget technology, if you ban something or say no,
or you say this can't be done,
it can't be done. There will
they'll
be
prove
a child
it.
Out
challenge.
There.
Yeah,
yeah.
Watch
that,
me.
That can do it. And you know, there is merit in what they're trying to do. How realistic is it? I don't know. I don't really think it is going to be hugely successful. I mean, I know the blacklist was leaked. There's something like 2,000+ websites on it. If you think about it, 2,000+. Out of how many million websites are out there?
Which change every day.
And most or a lot of the really revolting stuff that you want to prevent your kids from seeing is available on file sharing applications and peer-to-peer networks. They're not websites. They're not going to be covered in this filter blockout.
So Susan, you were saying before that, and rightly so, that saying to someone, just don't log into your email or don't check your SMSs, isn't really preventing anything. It's blinkering you from what's happening out in the community. And as you said, you get to school and the rumours are already out there,
yep.
So you may as well know
well,
about it in
seen
advance.
The photos.
So what's the basis of the education program? Is it technology specific, or are they very general messages about bullying is bad and you're bullying someone if you do such and such?
No, I think that we really need to start to teach our young people cyber safety education. When I was in the UK at Christmas time, it is now mandatory for all primary schools to include cyber safety education in the curriculum.
It's up there with road safety, I would have thought.
Well, you know, we teach kids about road safety. You know, the green light means go and the red light means stop. We teach them about safe party, drugs and alcohol. It's a community safety issue. This is new. You know, it wasn't around when we were kids. It wasn't around, you know, 10 plus years ago. But it is a new emerging concern and we have to deal with it. Education has to start from things as simple as what is a search engine? Because the way the kids think is they will understand what Google is or whatever they're using. They know they type the word they're looking for into it and they press enter. And then they always will click on number one because one is the best. You know, it might not be number one that you want. It might be number five because if you've chosen sperm whale as your mammal of choice for your grade four project, I guarantee you number one might not be what you're looking for. Or if you type in Barbie dolls to see what Mattel's bringing out for Christmas. There's a fair bit that the first few really aren't going to be Mattel.com. But kids aren't even taught that. They're not taught about what the technology is that they're using. So until they've got that basic knowledge, then they need skills to be able to deal with it. I'm not a fan of some of these sanitised social networking sites that kids engage in that have someone moderating the site. And
yeah, they're supposedly monitored or moderated.
Yeah, because they're not real-world experiences. Yep. Kids don't want to be on that. They want to be out in the real world. So if they're going to be there, we have to give them the skills as best we can to try and give them the knowledge so that they can make good decisions. Yes, I've typed in something. There's something horrible on my computer. I need to go and tell mum and dad. I'm being bullied and harassed online. I need to go and tell someone because we know from studies in America that around 80% of young people will not tell a parent or teacher if they're harassed online or they have a negative experience because the typical parental response is, I'll just disconnect it. I'll take it away from you. And that will solve the problem.
But is that the underlying problem that we're seeing these days, that a lot of parents are either inexperienced or don't want to know about it or think it's a school problem?
I think it's a combination of the three. Speak to any year-level coordinator in a school and they will tell you about the parent that's been up on the Monday morning saying, you know, Johnny Jones from the next class said something nasty to my daughter. What are you going to do about it? The fact that, you know, their daughter perhaps had the computer in the bedroom, which is an absolute no-no, and has been on it till 2 a.m. unsupervised, you know, I'd be looking at
that may be a contributing factor. Yeah.
Parental responsibility there.
Absolutely.
And it's hard being a parent and, you know, it's not one of the easiest jobs in the world. And for a parent, the internet and technology is the only thing that they have to share with their children where they can't call on their own knowledge to help out because it didn't exist when they were kids. So no matter how good you can bake a scone or drive a car or ride a bike, you can share that with your children. You can't. And it's frightening because kids will fob off their parents. You're dumb, you're stupid, you don't know. Go away, it's private. My kids say that to me all the time. Hi, kids, yes, I got your message. I'll just wave to you again. But, you know, they will try that on. They don't get very far with me, but for a lot of parents, it is frightening. Where do they learn about technology? From the media. Are there ever any good news Facebook stories out there? No. So they don't come feeling confident and comfortable about technology.
Indeed. And you're exactly right because you can draw on your own experiences as a parent from when you were the same age as your children. But when it comes to technology such as the internet and computers and text messaging, mobile phones, it's developing at such an incredible rate. And the fact that it wasn't at the same stage of development when we were kids, then yeah, it does pose a very big issue for parents, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I think they feel really disempowered to deal with it.
Are schools actually identifying this by and large, and are they're being proactive about introducing these sorts of education programs, Susan?
They are, and, you know, I do a lot of work in primary schools, secondary schools. I work in classrooms with the students, provide education sessions for parents and also do professional development for teachers. And they are coming to the awareness that they really have to jump on board. They can't just push it under the table and go, it's not really our problem.
I was going to ask that. Are they really surprised at the level that cyberbullying and this sort of taunting using technology is occurring? Does it leave them going, oh, gee, I never knew it was that bad?
I don't think teachers have that opinion at all. I think they're very au fait with the level of it because they're dealing with it every day. It's more the wider community and parents. The amount of parents that will say to me, oh, my child wouldn't know what Facebook was, or my child wouldn't have the ability to do this. Well, I'm sorry, but they will.
All right. So if a parent finds themselves in a situation where they suspect that their child is being bullied from afar by technology, what should they do? What should they look out for?
You need to be monitoring what your child is doing online, first and foremost. So you need to be aware if they're spending excessive amounts of time online, if their online time is, you know, do they leave the computer happy? Are they sad? Are they very secretive of what they're doing online? But primarily, you've got to trust your children to come to you if they've got a problem. You need to, and there's some simple steps you can do. You can block the sender if it's someone that's bothering you. You can block them if they're on MSN. You can delete them out of your Hotmail. Don't engage in argy-bargy back and forth, because kids will say, oh, but they started it, or they said it first, so therefore that gives me approval to be mean and nasty back. Get out of the conversation immediately and go and tell an adult about what's going on. Parents are often afraid. They have no technical skill. But I say to them, you don't need technical skill. You don't need to know how to wireless network your house. That's what you've got kids for. You do have the ability to know right from wrong and good from bad, and you can help your kids that way.
So do you encourage parents to get in touch with schools and talk about this, sort of what's going on, or directly to other parents? Or
no, never directly contact another parent. That's, mm-hmm. you know, rule number one, because in any situation that tends to inflame the situation. If it's school-based, and look, most bullying is by someone a child knows. If we're looking at sexual solicitation and grooming, it tends to be someone that the child has met online. But the bullying tends to be someone they know, that, or the child knows of. They may be logged on as, you know, naughty girl hot stuff, and they might not know that that's Jenny Smith, but it will essentially be someone they know. So if it's school-based, it's important that with any problem with your child, you tell the school. My daughter or my son is having problems online and I believe it's this person. I just want to let you know, not fix it or it's your problem, but we need to work
open
together.
Open dialogue and just
yes,
talk about it.
Yes, because the teacher's probably seen in the classroom that all of a sudden the social cohesiveness of the class has gone out the door and is wondering why there's two warring factions in the classroom. So it's important with anything that's going on that you let the school know.
Susan, how cooperative are the social networks themselves in helping to resolve these types of issues?
Interesting question. Look, they will tell you that they are...
We're all about naming names here, so
yes,
go to town.
They are right... You know, they will tell you that they protect kids' privacy.
Yep. We hear that all the time, though, don't we?
They do. Listen, and the prime example, if I just move off social networking, is games, online games. Kids playing online games. Parents go, oh, it's a game. A game in their mind is something safe and fun to play. Little do they know that little Johnny's chatting to random strangers all around the world. You go on to Club Penguin. It's a popular game for kids. It is now owned by Disney. How safe can you really get? If you go into Tell Me About This Game for the parent, it says Club Penguin is a safe place for your child to talk to other children.
But how is it safe? What steps are they taking
that's
to make
exactly
it safe?
That's exactly right, because
how
I
How do they
play,
prove they're other children?
That's right. I play Club Penguin. You know, am I an 8-year-old? I don't think so. So they tell you this and the parent reads it and goes, oh, that's really good. But they don't actually understand that anyone can be anyone online. The problem with MySpace and Facebook, the legitimate social networking sites are quite good. The problem we have is that we are in Australia. So if we need to actually access those records, it's a very convoluted process of warrants.
When you're talking about records, you're talking about technical records of who's online at what times.
Yes, and who said what to whom and yep. what's been posted and what's been said yep. and things like that. So that must by law, and Facebook and MySpace are from the USA, must be kept. And if law enforcement agencies all around the world serve them with a warrant, the information must be presented.
But that sounds to me like an incredibly bureaucratic process to have to go through
and
in
time
order to
consuming.
Access information, where you should just be able to contact them informally and say, my daughter was logged on last night, she was chatting to a person who identified themselves as this, I don't want them to be able to talk to each other, can you block them? Or
and look, they won't. It's not as simple as that. And as apart from the fact that the process is convoluted, it is costly.
Absolutely.
So
yep.
there is no way that law enforcement agencies all around Australia are going to fork out large sums of money for, you know, me calling someone a fat cow online, even if it is 57 times. Each of the applications, though, to their credit, do have a report abuse icon where you can email them and say, you know, I'm Mrs. Smith and I've got this problem, or I know that Johnny Jones is online and he's only 10, but he's pretended to be 69, because that's a really popular age for kids to be on social networking, and they are meant to deal with it. They do. Often 6 or 8 weeks down the track, they will tell you that they do it. They have a 10-day turnaround.
It probably goes into their email inbox with everything else, and they deal with 20 of the 5,000 outstanding requests every day, and they just get to it when they get to it.
And look, that I've had people from MySpace tell me, you know, oh, 2-3 day turnaround. You know, we will guarantee this. I get, when I was in the police force, Mrs. Citizen meeting saying, 6 weeks ago I sent an email about an issue, and nothing's happened. Could you help me out?
Send an email to who? The social network themselves.
Yes, to say I have an issue.
Yep.
Interestingly, though, YouTube used to be quite good, because as a principal of a school, you used to be able to email YouTube and say, look, there's images there online that, you know, of two kids in my school fighting. Could you please remove them? They've actually removed that, that application. And now the only people that can ask for things to be removed off YouTube are if you are actually in the footage. So a principal that's got concerns about what's online can't even contact them and say, this has occurred, it's been posted, could you please remove it? You've got to get one of the kids that were fighting or someone that was doing the wrong thing to contact them, which I think is a backward step.
So you look at what we're seeing online today. I guess you mentioned it, or you touched on it briefly, kids like being older than what they say they are, and those who are interested in grooming our kids like to say they're younger than who they say they are. And there seems to be no safe haven online where you can really guarantee the fact that only school kids, I guess, are in that environment or in that chat. So it really does fall back onto adults to watch, monitor, and keep an eye on what kids are doing. Now, that's all good and fine when it's a computer in the living room of
the
house.
Which is where it should be.
Yeah, and I think I'm of that age where I've got young girls coming up, and I know there's a few others in the room that are nearly the same age as well. And we have our computers in the living room. But the thing is, there's this mobile technology that's out there now in respect to PDAs and notebooks and things like that. And the schools like having these things at an early age for their educational development. So once again, they're moving away from being able to, like these little notebooks, and there's several in the studio here in front of us.
Very easy to hide under the doona.
Exactly. At night, just pop it under the bed, you know, and you can be sitting, as an adult, you can go, what's that noise down the hallway? And you get down there and someone's tapping around on a computer. Yeah. So not that we've got to that yet in our household, but...
Or you get the beep, beep. Beep, beep, yep. Which is the MSN coming in all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's the mobile devices, the old hand-me-down handset that my mum and dad have given them and all that sort of stuff.
My mobile phone's an internet terminal.
Yeah, and that's mine.
Exactly. So you can be communicating with people, whether it's SMS or MMS or email or even instant messaging. You can be doing that from the palm of your hand. Doesn't take much.
And to add to the mix, something that's near and dear to Adam's heart is Latitude, because he was very concerned about linking Latitude up with social networking sites to show the physical whereabouts of where people are. Now, Dr. Ron, you and I have tried this in recent times, and it's pretty accurate to the, you know, couple of hundred metres from where you are.
Well, a couple of hundred metres if you're using a phone network. If you're using inbuilt GPS in the phone, it's accurate to within
five
metres.
Or 10. Yeah.
That's scary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this is the new sort of level of cyberbullying that I guess there's going to be. There'll be groups of people where the friends at school log into the one environment and they'll show their whereabouts.
Where they are. And you said you weren't seeing this person anymore, but you were because you're at their house last night, because I saw you on Google Latitude.
Adults have the sense to know whether or not to use this technology and who to share it with.
Kids don't.
Kids don't. And it's not a technology thing. It's just a life experience, common sense thing. They don't have the common sense to think, well, maybe it's not good to tell all of these people where I am all the time. Maybe I should use some discretion here.
But what the kids will say too is that, I just met my friends to see it. You know, they've put it onto the World Wide Web. Think about what that actually stands for. But it was just there for my friends. And we also know that brain development for a female doesn't conclude till around the age of 20. And for a male, it's closer to the age of 30. The last part of an adolescent's brain to develop is the bit that covers their ability to perceive risk and make good decisions.
That would explain a lot.
So I mean, that's a medical fact. So, you know, these kids are struggling in many areas, not because they're dumb and stupid, just simply because they aren't developed. They don't have life experiences and they don't have a lot of common sense. They want to be popular. They want to be doing what everyone else is doing. And it gets down to, I think, especially with the small devices, having some really strong rules in your household about what's acceptable. Do these devices get put on the kitchen bench at 10 o'clock every night? You know, does the wireless network get turned off at 10 o'clock every night? Yes, you can have your computer, but the wireless network won't be on. You know, but, you know, it's very tricky. It's
common sense in a lot of respects to parents to do those sort of things too.
So it sounds like it's the same old problems just from a new technological angle, but the solutions are still the same sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Taking an interest in what your children do and helping them develop some common sense.
And so many parents will I'll say to them, do you ever go online with your children? Oh, no, I don't do that. Do you take them to the football? Yes. Do you kick a footy with them? Yes. Walk the dog? Yes. They do everything else with their kids, but they don't get online, chat to them on MSN, set up a social networking site with them. Many, many parents don't even know that there's parental controls on gaming consoles. Do they know that you can access Google through your Wii on your television? You know, it's just about making sure that people are aware of what's going on out there.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Joining us in the studio this evening is Susan McLean, cyber safety advisor with 27 years experience in law enforcement. So we might take a break in a moment. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about this topic. If you have a question, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. There's lots of people at the moment. One person saying, if my mum sent a friend request, I would not accept it. You know, that's probably one of the other things that mums have got going for them. Anyway, we'll take a break and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
YouTube has gone widescreen at last. Hello?
How can any ISP stay in business?
You're not going to get fibre to the home, not for a long time.
An expensive exercise in stupidity from the outset.
The whole idea is you take out one node, the rest of the network keeps working.
Look, we can share, we can play nicely.
We have a huge problem on our hands, ladies and gentlemen.
Entertaining.
A billion Chinese dissidents can't be wrong.
Informative.
Do it post-paid, because then there's no surprises, is there?
Independent.
The government's in control of this country, not Telstra.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, someone.
Who's is that?
Steve Jobs just calling.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's loveliest technology radio show.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here with a full contingency in the panel this evening. Adam Turner is in, Dr. Ron is in, JD's in, and of course we're joined by Susan McLean this evening, who is a cyber safety advisor now with many years with experience.
He's just watched his tongue, he can't do a thing with it.
Sorry, I have a cold. Dr. Ron, over to you. Oh, sorry, I've got to push your fade up. Sorry.
That's what I was going to remind you to do, that's all.
Thank you. Is that what you wanted to do?
Tricky thing, the English language.
Well, let's just talk about, during the break, the show continues off air as you would expect. We were talking a little bit about the filtering system that the federal government's looking at rolling out in the not-too-distant future, and the list that's become available, either for right or wrong, but nonetheless, it's out there now. Susan, what's your thoughts on what the government's trying to do with this wonderful filtering mechanism that they're going to try and legislate, but now they can't? And is it just, well, you tell us. What are your thoughts about it?
Look, I think it's got merit, and I think the thought processes behind it come from the heart, and it's right, because there's certainly stuff out there that young people shouldn't have access to, because we know that they can be psychologically damaged. However, in reality, I don't think it will work. And I don't think that out of the hundreds of millions of websites that are out there, the small number that will make the blacklist will make any difference whatsoever. And especially when you consider a lot of the inappropriate material is available on peer-to-peer networks or file-sharing applications.
So it would be fair to say that they're well-intentioned, Susan, but misguided.
I think so, yes.
Conroy reckons he wants to hit the peer-to-peer networks as well, but I don't like his chances. I think he's all talk.
I don't think he's got any hope whatsoever. All talk.
It's going to snowball out of control. If he thinks that he's going to be doing that and he's going to be banning individual IP addresses, then good luck. If he thinks he's going to be banning whole subnets and then whole networks, then good luck. He's just going
but
to
these
end
sites
up,
move. They're like,
yeah. Well, this is the problem. It's not
here
a
here today, gone tomorrow.
Absolutely,
it's not a. Not a problem that can be solved with a technological solution.
And that's how one of the people who are on the filtering list who shouldn't be there, I think it was a dentist in Queensland, the reason why they were on the list is because they got hacked a couple of years ago,
and they had objectionable content on their site.
Someone was using their site to host pornography. But that's been cleared up. A few years later, they're still on the list when they shouldn't be. Mm. So obviously, the current list they've got's not even being maintained properly. So what makes you think they can do a bigger one better?
I can give you a first-hand example of that. We do some web maintenance for a company here in town, which is a legal firm, and they were hacked recently as well. Now, this isn't your average small legal firm. These guys are representing fairly major players in today's corporate world. And it's just a simple backdoor. Someone had managed to sneak one of those nasty sites onto the back of their web host. So we had to basically move the website from where it was hosted in the United States back to Australia because the American sites seem to be hacked quite easily. And I guess that's how people can be put onto these lists. If someone's inadvertently put something nasty on the back door of a fairly reputable website, that's it for them. And where does that leave them in that respect to their business? So,
and there's no appeal process because you're not even told that you're on it.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Sorry, how's the scones there? Your wife has made some wonderful scones there.
They're very good. I'm trying to talk through one right now.
Next, his phone will ring you. Watch. Break the golden rules of radio.
That's the one.
All right. And of course, people are being put on these lists with no right of reply or anything like that. But is Mr. Conroy becoming the minister for censorship, as a lot of people are starting to talk about in the mainstream media? And of course, with the fake Mr. Conroy's coming out, well, that's just going to antagonise everybody. So where to from here? We've got this the software that the government put online for us, which I think you said before, Susan, only 5% of people managed, or there's very small uptake of it. Yep. Is this cyber filter, this online filter, trying to replace that because no one wanted it? Or do you think we're just a bit of a stubborn election promise? I think Conroy's his heart's in the right place, but I just think he's really fighting an uphill battle. And now what's happened is we've got this list come out in public, which has probably gone the wrong way for him. It's really becoming, you weren't getting it right anyway. You've got...
No, so why bother?
Yeah.
And I think the examples of the boarding candle and the dentist are perfect examples of how, you know, simple names can actually be linked in to inappropriate content, because it's not as simple as, you know, all the nasty websites out there don't have the typical words in their name.
They're not all called nasty.com.
No, or, you know, childpornography.com. You know, if it was as simple as that, you know, problem solved. But they're called things that you won't even think of. So unless someone physically finds them, reports them, then it gets assessed, then it makes the blacklist. By that stage, they've moved on. Mm. And I know I had conversations with ACMA last year or the year before. And at that stage, they weren't being proactive. They were responding if someone said, have a look at this, I think it's inappropriate. But they didn't even have the ability to go out and look for inappropriate stuff to add to the list. Mm.
So let's look about the legal ramifications here in this country. In Australia, can you run a website which is otherwise untoward, or is that against the law? And can who is it ACMA that prosecutes you, or is it the federal police that prosecutes?
Police. ACMA are the agency that look after the ratings and the content and things like that. So anything that's hosted in Australia is quite easy, and I use the word in inverted commas, to deal with.
So who should, if a parent comes across something which is obviously looking at them as Australian, what do they do? Do they ring the federal police?
Contact on the ACMA website. There's actually a place where you can report inappropriate content. So you basically fill out an online reporting form and you email it off, and then they generate a job number from it, and they actually have a look at it and see what's there.
Now, people think ACMA's a bit of a toothless tiger. I recently reported a spammer on, because I was really getting annoyed at someone sending me some email. They were Australian. I reported them to ACMA, and they dealt with it. I was really, really impressed, and they did it very quickly as well. So they're jumping onto it.
But how much of your spam comes from Australia?
Well, not much. But
here's one hand, and I'm sure you can count it on it.
Absolutely. But you look at people like Optus who are spamming. You look at other people like that, and they've been caught. And I guess that's a message to people that are thinking. Because how easy is it to set up a website and put up some pictures and stuff like that? It's not hard.
In the ocean.
It is. But then again, we need, I think as Eugene Kaspersky has alluded to on the course of the program when we had him, we need, you know, the Interpol of policing for internet usage, where they all talk together and they can all globally do it.
But they all want to be Conroy thinks he's Interpol. He thinks he's Superman, I'm not sure.
Sadly, he gets confused, really, isn't he?
There is VGT, which is the Virtual Global Task Force, which is an international group of law enforcement agencies to which the Australian Federal Police belong. And they were formed to try and be more cooperative when it came to dealing with large-scale investigations that were multinational and in all different countries. They tend, however, to only deal with high-level child pornography or as I would prefer to say, images of child abuse rather than use the term pornography, because that almost, you know, legitimises what people are looking at.
Mm. How does Australia compare with other countries in respect to this situation? Are Australians less, I guess, are they more educated? Do they know the rights and wrongs compared to others? No?
No, I don't think so. And I think, you know, Australia is geographically isolated. So I think...
Oh, but not technically,
no, though. No, but what I was going to say is that... So for every other single thing, we are behind the eight ball. We're slow. We get things afterwards. People have that mindset that, yes, it happens in America, it happens in England, therefore it doesn't happen to us. But as you said, and I was about to say, technology is just like one world above us. So there's no little borders up on the side of Australia that, you know, everything that we do in cyberspace sits above us here, and then what someone does in New Zealand sits above them there. People don't understand that. They think, oh, that was America, or that was England, or that was somewhere else. And they're not actually understanding the concept of what the World Wide Web is.
Mm-hmm. The other thing too, I think a lot of parents don't realise that once it's on the internet, it's normally there to stay, unless you've got incredibly magical, mystical powers.
Talking about
you can't.
Caged on Google.
Absolutely.
Yeah, talking about images and such things.
And text as well. You put up a page, pull it down 5 minutes later, if the Google bots come past and scanned it, it will stay in the Google cache for a long time.
Yeah. So
Wayback Machine's another one.
Oh, that's a beautiful site, that one, I think.
But people don't actually understand the permanent nature of cyberspace. They think, I mean, I'll say, you know, I can delete stuff off my computer without even my finger going near the delete button. It just magically disappears because I have no technical skill. But I also know that if I do delete something, I'm not really deleting it. And kids in particular, young girls that post almost pornographic images of themselves into their social networking pages, or the young girls in particular that send a naked or semi-naked photo of themselves to their boyfriend who loves them dearly and will not share it with anyone till tomorrow. He just forgets to tell them that. You know,
but what about
major, major, major issues.
But what about the Photoshop issues, the malicious issues where you get a head from someone at school and you post it onto a naked body and then email it around the place? You know, like that's where people have deliberately, intentionally
but you know what?
Gone
that
out to get
something. That doesn't happen that much. I can
kids don't know how to use Photoshop yet, obviously.
Oh, come on.
That's what I'd be doing if I was a kid.
But do you know what? There are enough naked or semi-naked images of young girls out there within their school
but
community
But as a form of
use.
Bullying, you could take the face of someone you wanted to bully.
Yeah.
Put it on the head of a naked body and send it to people.
If they do that, they tend, however, to put it on the body of a gorilla or something that is revoltingly bad. Not pornography, no.
Get an imagination, kids. Come on. Oops, I should leave now.
All right. So,
great advice there.
Where to from here, Susan? Like, you've obviously been doing this for a long period of time. Is there any magical solution, any magical cure, anything that really springs to mind, or is it really just a matter of educating students and kids and the community in general?
The community in general need to be educated. Parents need to have the confidence to deal with the problems in their home and to set some boundaries and some ground rules and to understand. You know, when their children are playing an online game, there's a fair bit, if they're connected to the internet, they are engaging with people all around the world. Skype. Oh, you know, I have to have Skype on my computer because my son said so. He wants to talk to his friend in the next street. And no, he doesn't actually really need it because the search facility is probably still there and who knows who's going to pop up and talk to your child there. There's a range of things, but it's about awareness raising and getting people to really understand the issues. And education is the key. The studies all around the world show that proactive, preventative education is the way to go. You will never, ever catch every bad person out there in any area. So you might as well try and prevent the problems before they arise if you can.
And a government blacklist, Susan, is not going to stop people from connecting to each other on Skype.
No, not at all.
It's not going to stop people from getting into chat rooms. Not going to stop people from exchanging details on MSN Messenger.
No.
So is there a portal, a web page, documentation, anywhere parents can go to sort of learn more about how to look and see and deal with things? Is
there
anything...
The ACMA has a pretty good page, I think.
ACMA do have a website. I think it's all called Cyber Smart Kids.
That's the one.
There are many, many, many web pages out there to help parents learn about the internet. The problem for most parents is they don't know what's good and what's bad, because if you've got a base knowledge of zero, you don't know how to, you know, cull something that's sensible or not. So, you know, when I do presentations, I hand out a list of about 10 that are legitimate, good, up-to-date sites where parents can go and get more information. CEOP, which is a site out of the UK, has a really good parent internet newsletter that you can sign up for, and every month they'll send you an update. Great, simple stuff, tips, practical knowledge, but written in the way that most parents can understand.
How do you spell that?
What site was that? Yes, CEOP, was it?
CEOP, C-E-O-P .co.uk. .co.uk.
No worries. All right. That's good. I think people can probably Google a few things and probably get some decent help. The search engines, having spoken to Microsoft in particular and also Google, they are very aware of these problems. And I think chat on our little chat room before was saying the examples you gave earlier, Google are right onto it. They actually gave Wikipedia results about those certain things that you were looking for. So I think the search engines are starting to play a major role in preventing kids online, even with images. Yep. I know, for example, with Microsoft's Live image search, that they have a three-process image sort of filtering system where they look for flesh and skin tones, they look for all that sort of thing. So,
oh, really? So,
yeah. Where were you when he was in?
But no. Those sort of companies are wanting to be seen as good corporate
citizens,
basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Google has Safe Search on by default. You have to switch it off if you
and
want
I think
to
find that's a damn fine thing too.
Yeah.
So,
Warlock's just given us a quick update in the chat room there. Ceop.gov.uk is the address we were referring to a few moments ago. Yeah. Thank you, Warlock.
All right, Susan, you're doing some stints with SBS's Insight program at the moment, which is going to be on a television set, what, next week or the week
next
after or something?
Next Tuesday night.
Okay, so we can learn a little bit more about that.
Got a whole show on the internet filtering.
Okay, so that's
debacle.
Good. Put that in your diary for everyone wanting to have a bit of a look at that. And there's going to be some interviews with some dentists and some dog, Maroochydore dogs.
Some dog breeders or whatever it is.
Yes, and they've got the cyber hacker Tom Wood is going to be on talking about his ideas as well. And
that's all good. I think the good thing about all this is that we're now starting to talk about it in the mainstream media and on television. Obviously, Insight's a fairly respected program, so it'll be very interesting to watch. What are you doing, Susan? Are you doing lectures or are you just doing the circuits of the schools and things
no,
like
no,
that?
No, I basically am out for tender. Anyone that wants to book me for a presentation.
Spruik your wares. What do they do?
My company is called SAL Consultants. They can contact me at salconsultants@hotmail.com, and I can send them an information pack on my background, what I offer, conferences, teacher
you'll
PDs.
Go and talk to them at nights and things like that
do
or whatever?
Yep. Parent education sessions at night, teacher PDs and classroom sessions with the students. I spent 3 days in Perth recently at All Saints Anglican Grammar School over there working with every student, all the teachers and all the parents. That's my business, and I'm passionate about it because I want to keep our kids safe.
Absolutely. All right. Susan, thank you very much for joining us in the Tech Talk Radio studios again. It's been fantastic.
My pleasure.
We will have you back in again sometime very shortly. Dr. Ron's trying to get a word out here.
And happy 25th wedding anniversary for tomorrow, Susan, as well.
Thank you very much. Yes, 25 long, wonderful years.
Oh, I'm glad you said wonderful there as well.
No, absolutely wonderful. It was, let me say this, the police force gave me a lot of wonderful memories and a lot of things in 27 years. The best thing it gave me was my husband and my three wonderful children.
Fantastic, Susan. That's good, isn't it? And yes, from the job too. That's amazing. Hey, many thanks again for joining us this evening. And don't forget, you can contact Susan on her website, which she, via email, should I say. It's salconsultants@hotmail.com.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. We'll be back with more in a moment. Free TV, I believe.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I want an Apple TV for Christmas.
Why? It doesn't do anything.
Well,
there's a thought.
A world of opportunity awaits.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I like my podcast, though.
802.11 ends. G's, B's.
You are where all this spam is coming from.
Sorry, that was a battery.
Thought you were losing your marbles.
Entertaining.
I don't have a bread knife that cuts through shoes.
That's the point.
Informative.
5 gig on Telstra. Well, it's not even worth considering.
Independent.
That was a complete and utter debacle, but
you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Yeah,
Stephen Conroy came out and
good.
He'll sort it out.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Freeview is a wonderful thing that they've been promising us coming soon. And
Freeview,
they've been ripping
what's
off,
that?
It's the Ford commercial where the cars go to TV monitors.
Free-to-air TV we've had for 50 years, is
that's
that it?
Yeah,
good.
David Ginchell came out today and confirmed that Channel 9 is going to have a second SD channel very shortly and run. Yeah, it's going to be a cross between TV1 and Fox 8 and have sitcoms and things.
More reruns of NCIS.
Can't wait for
that.
Can't wait for that. Yeah. It'll be really
more
good.
More of the same.
So what's your Freeview news?
Well, here's your definition of Freeview. Take a bucket of slop, put a sticker on the front of the bucket that says new and improved when all that's new and improved is the sticker.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
That's my definition of Freeview. Freeview is a con job. It's creating fear, uncertainty and doubt to convince people to buy new PVRs that won't let you skip ads. That's Freeview in a nutshell, and they've done it three times. They try to scare people into thinking that you won't be able to get the electronic program guide unless you buy Freeview compatible gear, which is not true. They try to scare people into thinking that it was a big thing in the Herald Sun the other day about how everything is switching to MPEG-4 in the middle of the year and your television will be obsolete and the only way you'll be able to watch new television
really?
Is with Freeview gear. Yeah, again, rubbish.
How can they run such tripe in mainstream papers when it's just not true?
It's the Herald Sun. It's their bread and butter.
Okay. All
right. So, yeah, it's just Freeview is all about scare campaigns. It's all about fear is the most powerful weapon in any war and Freeview are using
it
very well.
What are they afraid of? Foxtel?
They don't. Well, they're afraid of Foxtel. They're afraid of the internet. They're afraid of people skipping ads. They're afraid of people copying stuff. They're afraid that their nice little cartel of free-to-air television conglomerates that have been around for 50 years are suddenly aren't as important as they used to be. Yeah, but so they're trying to scare people into staying with them. Buy a Freeview endorse box because they've had all these ads just to confuse people, right? Now they're about to start a new ad campaign that they tell me called an education campaign. And it will be, are you confused? The answer is buy something with a Freeview logo on it and then you don't have to worry.
The answer is, well, we confused you, so...
We confused you, we scared you, and now we're bringing you the solution. We're your saviour. Just make sure it's got a Freeview logo on it, which means, A, it'll be MPEG-4 compatible for somewhere way down in the future when they move to MPEG-4, but there will be no ad skipping and there will be no easy way to get the recordings off the device.
Adam, who is behind the Freeview campaign?
The free-to-air broadcasters.
Free TV?
So there's a... Free TV Australia and...
I've heard free...
Well, Free TV... I'm not sure of the exact relationship between them all, but Free TV Australia were the people talking about this stuff before they came up with the name Freeview.
And is that a conglomerate comprised of all of the
Free TV networks? Australia, I believe, is all the free-to-air television network. It's right. Like the industry body that represents
the union of TV stations.
Well, for want of a better word, yeah.
So
So they're just trying to protect their own interests. The whole thing is a con job. The other con job is TiVo.
Oh, yes. There was something about that in the paper today, too. Do tell.
When TiVo came out, everyone said, this thing's a joke. The hard drive's too small. It doesn't let you do this. It doesn't let you do that. One of the things that it doesn't let you do that you can in the US is use your TiVo to watch the files from, we'll say, your computer and play them across your network, or take files from your TiVo and copy them across your network to another device, copy your recordings to a portable player or something like that. And when Freeview came out, they said, you will make all that stuff available as a software upgrade. It'll come out next year. It will cost, in the direct quote, tens of dollars.
Yeah.
They've just announced
$199.
It's $199.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Tens of dollars?
Yeah, 20 of them. So you've just got conned if you bought a TiVo with any plans of doing that kind of... If you're just a little
old lady... Is Seven behind this at all? Do you reckon Seven's taken a bit of the pie or
maybe.
What?
It was stupid to trust Seven. It's basically anyone who's trusted Seven has put their faith in the wrong boat, for a mixed metaphor. But if you're just a little old lady who just wants to watch digital television and record the occasional thing, TiVo is fine. But if you want to do things like networking around the house, and if you wanted to actually talk to anything else you own, then you're going to have to pay the $199. And even then, it won't be nearly as flexible as something like a Topfield to be on with.
And I guess that's just it. People just, because we're overloaded these days with technology, buy this, buy that, and it's quite evident in computers as well. People just go and they want, I can't be bothered researching it. I trust you. You tell me what I need. And they're looking at free TV to say, well, get one of these because. And as a result, they're being
conned.
Probably giving the wrong advice, I suspect.
They've gone out of their way to scare and confuse people. And
is
now
it working?
They're coming along. Yeah. You ask your man on the street, average man on the street, what the hell's going on with digital television? They don't know.
Hey, I'm confused. I saw it and I thought, Freeview, what's that? Yeah. When I first saw it.
And they say Freeview's huge in the UK, but Freeview in the UK is actually something. Freeview here is nothing but a marketing term.
Well, free-to-air television's been pretty huge here for the last 50 years as well. Warlock on our chat room says, Freeview shareholders include the ABC, SBS, the Seven Network, Andrew, to answer your question, Nine Network, Network 10, Prime, Wynn and Southern Cross. The ABC's Director of Television, Kim Dalton, will chair the not-for-profit organisation.
All the usual suspects.
Not-for-profit in the sense that not making money out of the organisation.
Yeah, all those members are making money.
Yes, but they're protecting their
interests. If you look at that list, the most advanced technological company there would be the ABC. in respect to what they're doing with iView and things like that online. Now, I'm involved with a major television program, and we're actually now turning things around where rather than making a television program to promote our rather than make a website, which is supplemental to our television program, we're actually going to make the television program an ad for our website. And on our website, you'll be able to see our program again with all sorts of other interesting value-added things. And the benefit of that is it's global. You can see it on any particular machine anywhere in the world. And I think that's a model which is scaring these guys big time.
And you broadcast 24/7.
Yeah, it's on demand.
Not in the time slot.
And it's free. It's like Freeview. It is actually free. All it's going to cost you is a bit of bandwidth.
But what's going to happen to the community TV stations like 31?
That's a big question.
Mm.
Well, that's been bugging these guys for a long time. No one's really understood the ramifications of going digital. Because when are we here in Melbourne? It's on our website.
2009.
Mildura. I think we're 11 or 12 or something. 2011,
sorry.
Yeah.
End of 2000. No, that can't be right. No, sorry. Regional Victoria is 2011. Metro Melbourne is the end of 2013. Yeah. Metro Melbourne's one of the last to go. So by the 1st of January 2014, there should be no analog broadcast. But I'm not sure
about... We haven't got to 2014 yet. So
I'm not sure about 31 and stuff like that. See, that's the thing. They need a big funding hit to be able to move to digital.
Well, they actually ran a little campaign a while ago. I remember watching it. And they were saying, you know, don't buy a set-top box because you won't be able to watch us.
Mm. One other question that people are asking about on the chat is about the EPG. In a nutshell, at the moment, if you watch digital television, embedded in the signal is information about what you're watching right
electronic
now.
Electronic program guide.
Yes, and that goes out to roughly the next 7 days, give or take. So if you call up the menu on your TV or your video recorder or whatever, it will show you what's coming on the next few days on that channel. Now, they are saying that one of the big things about Freeview is you'll get this electronic program guide, and they're creating the impression that this is some new thing different to what we've already got, and therefore you must get a Freeview box or you won't get this amazing new thing. This amazing new thing is the exact same EPG data that we already have. So whatever you can get now without a Freeview box, it's the exact same thing. The only thing that's new is that they're creating a new look interface that will be the same across different televisions. So basically a nice blue screen that's easy to move around, or green screen, whatever. And that will be the same on all devices. So if you move from a Sony to a Samsung TV, it will look the same. But it's the exact same data. So basically all Freeview is a skin for the EPG data that everyone else will already have. But they don't explain that to you. I had to go to Freeview and twist their arm to get that answer out of them. They want people to think that if you don't buy a Freeview box, you're missing out on this amazing EPG thing.
Now, is it only me, or does the ABC's EPG...
Yes, it's only you.
Oh, it's only me? Okay, I'll be quiet now. Is the ABC's EPG only a day or so in advance?
Oh, they fluctuate. The whole thing is a mess. Mm. It fluctuates, and they're not all that accurate. And it still doesn't keep up with the actual what's really happening. It only tells you what's supposed to be on there.
That was my next question. If Channel 9 do choose to run Star Trek 20 minutes late, will it reflect in the EPG?
No. It doesn't now, and this new one won't either, because it's the exact same data.
And that's the thing that scares the willies out of me, is if you've ever tried to use a PVR, a personal video recorder, and 10
minutes before, 20 minutes after.
Exactly.
Minimum. Absolute minimum. I would go 30 minutes after.
Yeah.
Try taping Letterman late at night.
But why isn't the PVR, or is it? Why isn't the PVR sufficiently intelligent to know, not whether it's 9:30 p.m. or 10 p.m. or 18 minutes past 12, why isn't it intelligent enough to know that the program is starting now and I will record now? The program is ending now. I will end the recording now.
Because that requires the broadcasters to put a little flag in the signal that says, hello, PVRs, are you listening? Lost is about to start.
Exactly.
And they won't do it.
But they have
this
in Europe.
Doing that back in the 80s.
They have it in Europe, but they don't have it here.
They can
they
do it,
will
but they
not
choose
broadcast
not to.
That information because they don't want you to actually be able to record what you want to watch. They want you to get half of it and go, oh, damn, and next week actually watch it, or else say, screw you all and go to the BitTorrent channel
and
download
this is the crux
it.
Of the matter. Like when TiVo came out, we had this argument in the studio here, and I was saying, well, if that's not being introduced by the broadcasters, then what is the point of TiVo? Yeah. There is no point. I might as well just build my own media centre in a PC, or I might as well just stick to my free-to-air and just program a VCR just to start recording 20 minutes late.
TiVo's advanced options for recording over and handling overlapping recordings and running early and starting early and running late are better than anything else.
But you'd still expect something sold by a TV network.
You would.
To at least work with the network.
If you want to guarantee, if you want the best possible chance of getting the show that you want to watch, TiVo is pretty hard to beat. It's very good under the bonnet. Just the tiny little fiddly bits about how the core PVR features are better than just about anything else I've seen.
But explain to me quickly how TiVo differs to my media centre. If I want to watch Star Trek
media sensors
said,
are a pain in the butt for a start.
but
the media center won't let you. Run a recording over on a Windows Media Center is 4 minutes.
No,
by default, four minutes.
If I have my media center and I say, I want to record this program, Star Trek, it's programmed to start at 9:30.
Yeah.
I'm going to start recording at 9:30. Instead of ending at 10:30 because they're probably going to be late, I'm going to end my recording at 10:50 or 10:55. How is the TiVo going to do anything different to what my media center
does? You can do that if it's a reoccurring recording on a media center. If it's a one-off recording, you can only push it out by 4 minutes. And the things with the media center, you can only change it by 30-minute increments.
What product are you talking about? Because on my media center, I can set any time to any time. What do you mean you can only do it by 4 minutes?
No, you tell it you want to tape this show, and then you tell it how long you want to go over it. It makes you... It's like 1, 5, 15
minutes. I'm not using the EPG. I'm doing it manually. I'm just saying manually record.
A lot of them don't let you do it manually. I think we're getting a bit too technical here at this point.
I think you and I
have different things in are picturing different things, yeah, and that's why we're going around
so
in
let's
circles.
Talk about Foxtel IQ. Yes. How does that compare with
that's pretty good. That's almost as good as TiVo for the underlying PVR recording features. There are other issues why you may not like it, but just as a PVR it's pretty good.
And because I don't get Foxtel, I had it once for years and vowed I'd never get it again, because once again for quality issues. But what free to air do you get on Foxtel these days?
It depends on whether you're on satellite or cable. And there was that. See, they were arguing with 7 because Foxtel's in bed with 9, so they're arguing with 7. They didn't want to share the high definition channels. They didn't want to share the EPG data, this and that. And then they cut deals where we'll share this with you if you share this with them. And then the high definition channels, the satellite subscribers have to wait until the new bird went up, which I think might already be up there now.
Bird being a satellite.
Yes.
Mm. Adam, thank you for that. We're going to take a break when we come back. Our Odd Spot gadget and website of the week. But in the meanwhile, we'll have a few more Valis and Scones.
Suffering suck it out. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, this thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's gadget of the week.
Out of my hole.
The phone company, otherwise known as Telstra, the incumbent, has finally released a device that actually might take some form of advantage of their new Next-G network, which is running at peak speeds of around 21 megabits per second. It's a new device that says it runs at 21 megabit, but you'll be lucky to get 6.
So you'll get 21 megabits per second into your...
No, not a chance. I tested one of these. No chance.
Oh, you've actually had a play with it. Nice little blue little USB device, which is retailing for $499, which I think is fairly overpriced for a device of that nature.
Yeah.
Someone's making a lot of money out of it. But it's probably the only way that they'll be able to manage to get something out of their, I don't know, how would you say, their network. Because it's 21 meg and you need a 21 meg device because I don't know anything else on the market that does it. So,
but this doesn't even do it.
Yes. Well, nothing will, I guess, for the time being. So if you're out and about shopping and looking for one of these little gadgets, that's the Telstra's new 21 megabit per second key. I guess it'll be available from all those little Telstra shops around town very
shortly. So it's USB into your laptop, and then the other end you plug a SIM card into?
USB into your laptop, yeah, and you probably put a USB stick inside the USB. SIM card inside the USB stick.
Cool.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Very good.
$4.99 at a Telstra shop. Buyer beware.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This website we hinted at the start of the show. It's the Apple Steve Jobs timeline. It's a very long and convoluted URL, so we'll actually make a small link and pop it in the show notes there. But if you go to the New York Times website, nytimes.com, and in the interactive section, you'll see the timeline there according to Apple and Steve Jobs.
Yeah, just don't look for the Apple 3 or the Lisa. They're missing.
Why are they missing?
Well, yeah, long story, not enough time. Apple III, Steve decided it shouldn't have a fan, so they didn't put a fan in, so it overheats. All the chips popped out, didn't work.
Good decision, Steve.
It's very good. So it starts out at the 1st of April, not an April Fool's Day joke, 1976, when Apple Computer was founded, and goes all the way up to the 14th of January this year, when Apple shares fell after Mr. Jobs announced he was going to step down as a CEO.
He's going to have a holiday for a bit of a sickie, six-month sickie.
Health reasons. Yeah, but we'll put the full link there in the show notes later, but have a look at that on the New York Times website. That's our website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
an iPod repairman from Michigan who managed to score more than 9,000 iPod shuffles from Apple is now facing fraud and money laundering charges. The Boston Globe reports that Nicholas Woodhams, 23, essentially guessed serial numbers for the scaled-back iPods and entered them into Apple's system, claiming they were replacements for faulty devices. He made his employees enter serial numbers and have the MP3 player replacements sent to a UPS postbox. When Apple didn't receive a defective iPod in return, it charged the replacement to a credit card. Woodhams used cards that rejected the transactions, according to the Globe. The computer giant sent out more than 9,000 replacement shuffles, which Woodhams sold for $49 each. It's not a bad
Good scam, really, if until you get away caught, with it.
Yeah, the US government, which filed charges in Grand Rapids last week, wants to seize Woodhams' real estate, Apple computers, two vehicles, and a motorbike, plus over $500,000.
What about his iPods?
Don't take his iPod.
Yeah, well, they're all gone. Allegedly, the proceeds of his what's now known as his shuffle fraud.
Put him in jail and give him an iPhone, I reckon.
There, we said iPhone, Warlock. Sorry, that's all we can do.
You've been listening to Odd Spot, Andrew.
Tech Talk Radio. We've had a wonderful evening this evening. Thank you to everyone who has participated. Adam Turner's come all the way in from the other side of town. Susan McLean, she's been came in the way from Sydney today too, so on the way home. Thank you to one and all. We'll be back at the same time next week on the radio station that you're currently listening to us. In the meanwhile, send us an email. All those sort of good things, you know where to do it. TechTalkRadio.com.au.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.